Hi folks, this is Rich Shea back with the second podcast of Play Board Games Better. In this episode, I'll discuss some things outside of actually playing a game well that affect how well you play, based on my and my friends' experiences. The advice here only changes a little if you are spending an afternoon gaming or a whole week at the World Board Gaming Championships. In this episode, I conclude my list of rules and behaviors. If you listen to this and it sounds preachy and obvious, I apologize, but I didn't want to leave the obvious parts out. I wanted to make sure everybody who hadn't played competitively or thought about it that way got the benefits of all the things that I learned, sometimes painfully. The best players that I play against are also fun to play with, because even the most serious game is played in a friendly, fun-loving spirit. Serious gameplay doesn't become mean-spirited or obnoxious. Aside from being more enjoyable, I also think this helps good players achieve the best possible outcome. Annoying people often finish last. The best players I know don't have attitude. Confidence, yes. Trash talk, sometimes, but they're never smug, insulting, or taunting. You want the other players to think of you as someone fun to play with and someone they would pick to learn a game from. Even if you are Machiavellian to the core, having other people think you're a good person to play with has practical advantages. People won't gang up on you at the start of every game. When you do something evil in a game, it won't stick to you forever. And players won't resent when you win. Well, not as much anyways. You can still end up with an enemy in a game, but it is less likely. And that's a problem when you have a bad attitude or things degenerate into obnoxiousness. You might get an enemy. What I mean is that something will happen in the game that will cause one or more players to change their victory condition from winning to making you lose. Not only is this dangerous, it's also not playing competitively. And that leads to rule number 4. I had 3 rules in the first episode. Never be an enemy. No matter how much someone enrages you by their lame play or senseless attacks, stay calm and keep playing to win. Don't seek revenge for what happened to you in a previous game. Does that mean you never trash talk or poke some fun during a game? No, but be sensitive to the environment. You want the other players to know that what you do in the game is about the game, not about them. If you have a choice when doing something to another player, for example, you're picking the victim for the robber in Settlers of Catan, make the choice rational, or at least seem rational, most of the time. Get something you need, or block the leader. Payback goes to the bottom of the priority list. It may be a legitimate decision criteria sometimes. I've talked about aggressive play and enemies, but there's another way to annoy the other players. That is slow play. Slow play is relative, of course. Familiarity or habit can make some people very quick players, and almost anyone looks slow compared to that. If you look at the time listed for a game on Board Game Geek or on the game box, and then look at each player's share of the time and divide it by the number of turns, kind of boring, nerdy thing to do, but what you'll end up with is a pretty small number. In a 4-player game of Puerto Rico that lasts 90 minutes and has 12 turns, then each player during the 48 actions that are taken, their share of it's going to be less than 30 seconds. Now, most of the time, it actually won't take you 30 seconds to make a decision. But if you find out you've been staring at the board for 3 minutes and nothing's happening, you're holding up the game. And your brain is probably locked up and you should just pick among the moves that you already considered and didn't immediately discard. It's pretty important to get in the zone. You have to start planning your next moves. And in tournaments, there's a time limit on the games. You don't want to be the person who used up all the time and then caused the game to be judged by one of the game masters at the end. Nobody will like that. Now, when you get in the zone, you're going to be planning your next turn. Things might change, you might have to be flexible, but you should have already discarded a bunch of moves and have it down to a few things that are probably going to be the thing that happens the next time you have to make a choice. I hope you'll take the time to read the rules or at least skim them before any event. You'd be surprised what you pick up or remember when you do. Probably the most extreme example was for St. Petersburg tournament, where one player insisted that money was not hidden from the other players. He couldn't have read the rules, because in them, not only is money hidden, but players are expressly forbidden from stating how much money they have, and I didn't realize that until I reread the rules. Aside from reading the rules, it is helpful to practice. Even if you just set up the game and play through a few turns alone, you'll knock the rust off and arrive with a clearer view of how to start playing. If you can actually get in a game with friends before the event, that's even better. For Total Confusion 25 this year, I am trying to review one game a day in the 2 weeks leading up to the convention. I'll let you know how that goes. The next important point is to arrive rested. This may take some thought in scheduling. It's usually more convenient and less expensive to arrive just before the event starts. But you're taking a chance that traveling won't be exhausting, isn't it always? Or that you won't arrive late because of some delay. I try to arrive the day before the event start to both minimize the hassle and maximize my enjoyment. You might not always have the option to do that, but it's worth planning for it and trying to make it happen. Get a good night's sleep every night. It's tempting to stay up late every night with your gaming buddies, but it's not a good idea. I hope that if you are sharing a room, the other folks are on a similar schedule, or that you can sleep through people coming and going. Food and drink is important. My son recommends a larger-than-average breakfast. It's my experience that a good-sized breakfast can make up a little for some missed sleep, but it can't fix you up after an all-nighter. You don't want to gorge yourself, but having a decent breakfast, even if that isn't your usual regimen, is a great idea. Schedule in meals, and try not to just quickly bolt down a meal so that you don't miss out on gaming. The results will not be good. Keep some energy bars with you in case you have to miss or postpone a meal. And keep in mind that any food sensitivities that you have will be amplified by being tired or stressed. So don't wander out of your comfort zone for foods. Fluids are easy to forget, and that can be really bad. Honestly, your brain will shut down on you if you get thirsty enough. And the warning signs are minimal. By the time you feel thirsty, you're probably already dehydrated. Just make sure to have at least 2 glasses of water between each meal, or at least 5 in a day. You can drink soda or coffee also, but make sure you get just plain water in you too. They aren't the same. Soda and coffee can actually have a dehydrating effect. Take breaks from the game board. Really, I know you came to play, but get up and walk around a little between events. Walk for 5 to 10 minutes at least every couple of hours. Go look at the dealer area, or walk outside, or just go to the hotel gift shop. A longer walk once a day, or even some exercise, would actually help your performance at the table. Pacing is important. If you schedule competitive events too closely, you'll become wound up pretty tight, and your performance will suffer accordingly. Play some games just for fun, or to learn new games. Visit that dealer area. Have dinner with friends. Overall, you'll get more gaming in that way. You don't want to burn out and stop enjoying what you're doing, so pace yourself. The best way to control the pace and intensity of the event is to work with a schedule. You don't have to adhere to your schedule tightly, but have one. Then you can be flexible without missing anything important. That's the other reason to schedule. Besides controlling the intensity, you make sure not to miss important events. If you plan your schedule before you arrive, it's that much more of your brain available to play well. Clearing mental clutter out of the way will help you focus. If all this sounds like a lot of work just to have fun, well, take it with a block of salt. But the people I know that play the best and compete the best and seem to be having a lot of fun doing it, take some time ahead of events to make sure they have a good time when they get there, and keep their personal objectives clear without having to worry about anything but playing well once they're at the table. If you want to get into the groove of playing better, I'd recommend starting with a local game club day or a regional event. They aren't too hard to find. Regional gaming groups are often found as board game geek guilds. I will start listing links and dates of events with tournaments on this podcast website. If you know of any you would like listed, send me info at playboardgamesbetter@gmail.com. My son Rich has a few important points about playing better that relate to competitive play, highly competitive play. He explains them in more detail in an article he wrote on the Mana Drain. I've paraphrased and removed the Magic the Gathering specifics. 1. Be humble. Being humble means acknowledging mistakes and being open-minded about the idea that you make mistakes. We all do. To improve your game, you need to correct mistakes. To correct mistakes, you need to see mistakes. To see mistakes, you need to be open to the possibility that you make mistakes. To be open to the possibility that you make mistakes, you need to be humble. So to improve your game, be humble. 2. Let go of the myth of luck. Does luck happen? Sure, sometimes, but it's rare. Most things that a player perceives as luck are in fact the results of decisions that a player, or his opponents, have made. Did you fall far behind right from the first turn? Well, was that luck? Or did you pick a strategy that made you more reliant on less likely events in an attempt to catch up quickly? If there was something you could have done about it, it wasn't luck. 3. Practice. Now, this rule is pretty harsh, and it requires a different level of dedication than I espouse or practice, but if you want to excel, you need to do this, and this is how my son explains it. I'm always amazed by how many players don't practice and then expect to do well. Game playing, like most other human activities, can be improved by the application of practice. Practice until you are familiar with the most common situations. Practice beyond the point where it's fun and to the point where it's gotten boring. Practice until you can use muscle memory to get through most situations and can reserve actual cognition for the unusual circumstances you sometimes encounter. Now, playing a game until it's boring just so that you'll win more often doesn't sound like my idea of fun. But my son invests a lot of time in competitive play, and if you're going to go to that level, that's seriously good advice. 4. Learn how probability works. We're playing games where numbers permeate the entire process. They can help you and they can hinder you, but knowing how they work can allow you to make better decisions. You don't need to have a high-level understanding of statistics, but a basic understanding of how probability works will be quite useful. We'll start covering that in the next podcast. 5. Learn the difference between a favorite game and a best game. If you enter an event and invest money in the entry fee and time in preparing, then you ought to select those games which maximize your odds of success. Now, that means two things. Mostly, just because you love a particular game does not mean that you should play that game. Play the games you are best at. Conversely, however, you may in fact have a better chance of winning a game with which you are more familiar and about which you are more enthusiastic. Personal preference and ability are distinct, so plan and choose accordingly. Don't play a game you hate, though. I left the Settlers of Catan tournament after winning in the first round because I really disliked the fast start game they were using. 6. Keep the right mindset the day of the tournament. Stay hydrated, don't get hungry, don't get distracted by stray thoughts. Focus on the game at hand. Different things might work for you, so learn the mental state in which you play best and make sure that your mind is ready. Rich's advice was won by hard experience and a lot more dedication to playing at a high level than I have put in. But it's worth knowing what you have to do to take the next step. One drill that I want to give you to try is actually not that hard. The idea is to start widening your view past your own play in a game. Try to figure what the player after you will do. State it to yourself, or even write it down, so that you will know if you are right. This is different than just watching him or her play. Look at what their options are, and see what you would choose, but also try to get into their game enough to try to guess what their choice, not yours, will be. And remember, you're either right or wrong, not sort of right. It's only a drill, but grade yourself so you'll improve. At first, just do one other player. Eventually, I hope you will be looking at all the other players this way. This is harder when players have hidden hands or hidden resources. Then you can play a different game. Once the player after you takes a turn, try to calculate what resources are hidden from you, based on their move. Then watch for those appearing later. This drill is less relentless and time-consuming than the practice Rich advocates, and should actually be fun to do. I hope these ideas will help you enjoy longer game events and help you to succeed. I have Rob Kircher. Now, it's actually Rob's fault that I care about competitive gaming as much as I do. Yeah, it really is. I mean, I've gone to Origins and I play
stuff. Get blamed for a lot of things.
But yeah, Rob does get blamed for a lot of things. But I went to TotalCon because I'd always wanted to go, and I finally went, and that's when I met Rob and his buddies. And they had some nicely run tournaments. Not a lot of pressure, but good competitive gaming. And I got sucked in. Then it was off to Lancaster and the WBC and EuroQuest. And just a whole lot of fun, and now this podcast. So I thought for my second interview, since I already used my son, I'd go to the next person, Rob. Now, Rob is actually a very competitive gamer, and I think everybody who knows him knows that, but he's probably even better known for what he does to spread competitive gaming, running the gaming room at TotalCon, and running events at the World Board Gaming Championship. Rob is great at playing, teaching, and organizing gaming. So I thought I'd ask him the standard questions. Rob, how did you get started in gaming?
Well, gaming, I actually started when I was 6 years old when I received War at Sea from Avalon Hill for my sixth birthday.
At 6 years old? Wow. Would they think you were precocious, or they were just clueless about games?
No, my dad had quite a bit of an Avalon Hill game collection. And figured the best way to get an
opponent
is to teach someone how to play games. So quickly from War at Sea to Victory in Pacific to not much longer playing Squad Leader and Luftwaffe and other the classic Avalon Hill games.
I see. Yeah, see? That's why you ask. Then you find out. Why is competitive gaming important to you? You like to play in tournaments. Well, you have to play for fun too, but...
Well, the competitive gaming is not necessarily to play to win, but it's also to play with other opponents and see other strategies and see how other people play games, because a lot of times people will play within their same group and a lot of games might become stale because they'll play the same game or the same way or the same person could always win every time. So the best way to learn or to get better at a particular game is to go outside of your group. If you play against better players, and generally more of your tournaments will have better players, that you should get better at playing.
So what makes a particular game more interesting than another game in a competitive environment as opposed to a casual one? What do you look for when you're picking out which games to play competitively? Because at the big events, you have to choose which tournaments you're in.
Well, that depends on the convention that I'm going to. I tend to pick a lot of games that have shorter durations for some tournaments, only because you get to play a lot more variety. But a lot of the games I like to, as to which ones I like to pick, would be ones that have a clear way of advancing, that they'll have so many times that you need to play before you advance to the next round. And games that are fairly well balanced is another thing that I'll look for. There are some games that if someone is inexperienced at the game that could unbalance the table, is something that I might avoid.
At least when you're choosing between games. So what games do you think you play best?
The games I play the best are probably the ones that are economic or development in style, where you have to build some kind of economic engine or achieve a goal through a series of advancements. Games like Advanced Civilization or Age of Renaissance are some of my favorite games.
So you don't mind, not in a competitive environment, but you don't mind investing a lot of time in a long game?
Oh no,
if it's
no.
The kind of game that you like?
Oh no, no. With both of those games are both 5 or 8 hour games, and I've actually even played both of them in a competitive environment as well.
Are the games you like to play your favorite games, or the games that you play best? or
not always. I actually play a wide range of games.
Yes, you do.
From the very short to games that could take 4 to 6 hours. And a couple of the favorites I have are in each category. I do. A lot of my favorites are the longer games.
Are there games that you like to play, but that you avoid in a competitive setting, where they might be fun, but they don't make for a good tournament experience?
Sure, absolutely. The games that, for example, Puerto Rico, you'd want to play in a tournament with better players, but sometimes you have to be careful if you have someone who's new at it that can make a move to unbalance a game. And you kind of have to be careful that as you're picking them, that you don't run into a game where you could invest 2 or 3 hours in a game and then suddenly become upset if someone makes a wrong move.
Yeah, Puerto Rico is sort of the poster child for that kind of possible outcome. How do you approach learning to play a new game? Do you have a typical approach? Do you just go in and play it? Or
for the most part, like to look at the rules ahead of time, or I actually, once someone can show me the rules once and I can play it once or twice, at that point, I could usually teach out the game at that point. But there's not any one particular method, because I've had games where I like to, if someone can show me first, and there's ones that I get the rule book tossed at me and say, here, learn the game and then teach us. But I guess the preferred method is to actually get to play the game once, then thoroughly read the rules, and then go from there.
Try it, learn it, teach it. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, for people who don't know Rob, he spends a lot of time teaching games to a lot of people. Given that, though, what do you think is the most important skill or piece of information that the typical player you meet should know that doesn't know, or should have that doesn't have? I guess the most typical thing that a player could correct to make them better that you see in your vast experience?
Probably just paying attention to what's going on. Because sometimes players will get wrapped up in what they're trying to do and might not be looking at what other players might be doing, either picking up strategies in the game or positioning themselves where they would have an advantage over them. Yeah, just paying attention in general to the overall board position, I think, would help a lot.
The last question is tournament play. You've seen basically every format that's in use and have a lot of experience running them in that format. Is there anything you'd change about tournaments typically, or is there a favorite and a least favorite tournament format that you have?
Well, the tournament format that I like the most is one that, depending on your number of players, that you have the preliminary heats that you need one win to advance, and then you would advance there from then to a single elimination system to either a quarterfinal or a semifinal and then a final. The games that you have to play continuously to then reach a top four or top two often take a lot more time than what I'd like to invest in the game.
I think, and based on the interview with Richie, part of it is that you'd like the option to know when to stop and play some other games because you're looking for variety, as opposed to having to invest a lot of time and still not being sure you're going
to
advance.
Yeah, because the type of gamer, I like to play a lot of different type games. I don't specialize in any like one or two or three specific games where if I'm going to a convention, that's where I'd be playing just that one game.
So win one in advance is probably your favorite format.
Preferred format, yes.
Because that way you get the most variety out of a whole tournament experience as opposed to a single game tournament. I mean, it's nice to have tournaments where it's just one kind of game and you can have a full Swiss, but you need a bigger crowd and a lot more time invested.
Well, there's some conventions that I go to, unfortunately one that just ended called Enlightenment, which just had one game for a while there. Age of Renaissance is all you played for the entire weekend, and then they tried to expand it with two games, but unfortunately, not enough variety to bring enough people for them to continue it.
People like variety, and if you're going to go, I guess if you're going to travel and invest in a hotel room and take several days away, you probably want some variety, typically. Or a small crowd, in which case you should probably go over to somebody's house and crash and play games for a few days. Well, thanks, Rob. Now, the other thing, of course, this will come out before TotalCon, and we keep pushing it because it's a great board gaming experience, and if you just want to try out competitive play for the first time, I can't think of a better place to do it. It's simple, it's straightforward. Just about every tournament, there'll be a teaching session at some point.
Or any game that you want to, that is a tournament, you can just ask any of the staff members, and we'll be more than happy to show you before the heat runs, so that way you at least have a chance to get a look at it beforehand.
So it's not too big, still pretty competitive. There's some really good players that show up there, but it's very well run, in my opinion. It's my favorite small tournament. Obviously not the dogs. Well, thanks a lot, Rob, and we'll be seeing you at TotalCon. Well, actually, I see Rob almost every week to play games, which is a lot of fun, along with Joel, who's patiently sat through this interview. Thanks, Joel.
Thanks.
Now we're going to go back to discuss.
One question asked for Rob, which goes along with your series, which, do you have a way, something you can recommend to people, how they can get better at playing games when they're new to it? Say somebody wants to get into the hobby. Is it just playing the same game over and over again, or they should play different games, and what should they be doing to get better?
What they should do is they should take a particular game, play it at least a couple times, two or three times, before moving on to another game. Because some of the gaming concepts that if they can pick up from one game, they'll notice that they'll apply in other types of games that they play as well. So if you get to know where you're pretty comfortable with one game before necessarily moving on to a lot of different games that you only get to play once, that would be one good approach.
Yeah, because I've noticed that the more games you're familiar with, it makes it easier to learn newer games.
That's true. There's a sort of structure and a language to games, and at any given time there's a set of types of rules and way the games work that are popular, and in every creative endeavor, of course, copy from the most brilliant people and you'll at least look smart. And that happens in game design too.
Yeah. I think another thing is I think most people don't mind if they're new to it, if they're playing a tournament, if somebody that's new asks the question now and then. It's not cutthroat in that people don't mind if you have an occasional question while you're playing answering it.
Yeah, the one thing I said is don't be afraid to enter a tournament, even if you've only played just one or two times, because you'll find that most people in the industry, in gaming, if you have a question, don't hesitate to ask.
Right.
And most gamers are pretty friendly. And frankly, if you have any questions, go to the people running the tournament and say, well, what's a good event that's probably going to be a little more casual or maybe a little less serious than some others? As we mentioned, sometimes Puerto Rico players can be kind of serious about the game, and Stone Age players, not so much. You know, it's just so it varies a little bit from game to game, but you can get an opinion on that before you play, and people will be happy to answer questions like that. Well, thanks a lot. Hopefully you'll all listen to next month's podcast, and in the meantime, I'm going to put up another recon. I did one on Agizia. I hope you've listened to that and maybe looked at the web pages, and I'm going to start on one for Seven Wonders, and that should be out pretty soon. Thanks a lot. That's all for this time. Tune in about a month for the next podcast. If you or you know someone who'd like to sponsor a podcast or be featured in a podcast or even be interviewed, get in touch with me at playboardgamesbetter@gmail.com and let me know.